Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com, and this is Tuesday, January 7th, 2014. So this is the first show of the new year. Absolutely wonderful. Okay, so today it's larceny, anyone? Grand larceny. How much will you take? How much will a patient take? How much will a human being take? And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the acts of the healthcare system and really of the patient-doctor interaction seen through the lens of criminality. In other words, if we look at it through a lens, the same lens that we might, say, view the acts of two individuals who are untitled, neither one has a title of patient or the title of doctor, how would this look? What would this look like? You know, does this help us understand and get more insight or more specifically more backbone, the backbone to get up and just walk away? Many times people are trapped in a doctor-patient interaction, and just like a child being molested, you feel like, oh, my God, I'm in too far. I can't get out now, or I don't know how to get out of this. And what I want to do is I want to break that spell. But I want to have people look at what's happening to them in real time through the lens of criminality, of criminal laws that are out there that actually prohibit such behavior, and with good reason. So if we can help break through that and get people to real time perceive that they are the victim of grand larceny, to perceive that they are the victim of felonious assault, then I think it'll be a lot easier for people to very quickly decide what immediate action they can take. So now the way things are, people are left with this feeling of frustration, this feeling of being exploited, this feeling of being abused and just totally helpless, because what can you do? Maybe you can file a lawsuit, maybe malpractice, and what's the lawyer going to tell you? He's going to tell you, well, you know, the doctor only committed felonious assault, and I really can't get that much money for you. It's not worth my while to take your case. But if you understand, as the process is proceeding, what's happening to you, then that's a huge help in terms of your doing what we call primary prevention, which is to simply get up and walk away before things reach the point where your level of personal abuse slash loss rises to the point of degradation or even death. Okay, so where are we going to start? Well, why don't we start at the very bottom with just the most simplest of things. Let's start with simple assault. Now, simple assault is very easy to grasp. What I like about physical or simple assault is that it's clear what it is. So simple assault is simply deliberately an intentional act by one person. So a doctor commits an intentional act, and the intentional act creates an apprehension in another person, an apprehension that there is imminent harm. This is interesting because the intention does not need to be an intention to assault, but the act has to be intentional. So this means if the doctor commits an intentional act, and that leads another person, we'll call that person a patient, to feel apprehension or imminent harm, then that's simple assault. And if you look into a doctor-patient encounter, you can find that pretty much everywhere. When a person walks into a doctor's office and gets a blood pressure check, most people get extremely apprehensive. And that's where you get the term white coat hypertension. The person's blood pressure shoots up because the person's apprehensive. So an intentional act by one person, called a doctor, taking the blood pressure, it creates this apprehension in another person, just the white coat hypertension. Just that if the doctor didn't have a title and the patient didn't have a title, there's two people on the street, and you have an intentional act by one creating apprehension in the other one, boom, simple assault. How complicated is that? Let's take it a step further. Now, one thing that makes assault pretty straightforward is total lack of benefit to the person on the other side. For example, we are trained that we have to accept a certain level of discomfort and harm from the doctor in order to receive a greater benefit. Of course, greater benefit doesn't usually materialize. So in the case of checking the blood pressure, now when you say checking the blood pressure, like Dr. Dino says, that's ridiculous. No, it's not ridiculous when the intentional act by the physician, which is checking the blood pressure, causes the apprehension in the patient, which is a falsely elevated blood pressure, which leads to the prescription of medication that's, in this case, not needed, therefore harmful, lowering the person's blood pressure, and causing them to either fall and break a hip or causing them to even die. So this is not trivial. It's not trivial. Let's take it a step further. Let's say the person whose blood pressure is being taken is under 30, has no medical problems, and it's just part of the screening, whatever. Well, this is a big issue. Why is it a big issue in a person under 30? Well, the Journal of the American Medical Association just had a full article devoted to nothing but hypertension and who should get treated, who shouldn't get treated, and who benefits from getting treated for hypertension. And it's shocking, but they determined that anyone under the age of 30 has absolutely no benefit whatever from getting their blood pressure treated, no matter how high it might be. So for a doctor to check a blood pressure in an individual under 30 is absolutely simple assault. And if you prescribe medication, well, now we're getting into aggravated assault. In other words, with a possibility of greater harm, and the greater harm being physical harm to a person when they swallow the pill. So there we have, so wait, how do we know that these people under 30 are in danger of getting their blood pressure treated? Well, all we have to do is go to mayoclinic.com. And what do they say at mayoclinic.com? Well, this is mayoclinic.com. This is not just any old, slouchy site. These are people who take themselves pretty seriously. And what they say is, if you are a child, and that's certainly someone under 30, and your blood pressure is high, then you may require medications. So this renowned website Mayo Clinic is suggesting that children be the victim of some serious assault here. Now, what about larceny? So we got assault, simple. Now, another thing, another form of simple assault that really always bugged me as a doctor, and I was very unhappy with it, is a school exam where all the sons of America have to get their testicles fondled every year in order to play sports. You would think that once it is documented at birth that they have two testicles, that would be the end of it. There is no need to further fondle the scrotum to determine that there are indeed two testicles. That's kind of like establishing that there's two arms. How many times do you have to count this? But I just think it's a piece of inappropriate touching. It's not at all beneficial to the poor kid, and only serves to invade his privacy and give him the impression that his body is not his own. Now, you can add, by the way, the adult physical exam as well to the case of assault. In fact, it might not even be simple. It might even elevate up to aggravate assault. Why? Because the adult physical exam involves tools. And these tools we can actually term as weapons. A tool example for, it's a speculum for a woman, and for a man, blood pressure cuff or other instruments that be put in the throat. So why would you say that this is that kind of an act? Because first of all, there is no medical benefit to the annual physical exam. And so we have to say this is certainly an act committed by one party, creating apprehension in another party, again, under false pretenses. And once it's under false pretenses, the false pretense being the act is beneficial to the second party. So once you have false pretenses, what do you have? Well, any consent given under false pretenses is not legally consent. Very interesting. Very true. So simple assault, definitely the physical exam rises to that level of that test. And then aggravated assault using a weapon / instruments, definitely the adult physical exam certainly rises to that level. And one thing that's defined here is rape is specifically mentioned. And many women who have experienced pelvic exams would certainly say that it's pretty unpleasant, pretty unpleasant. Now, again, most women get pelvic exams because they believe that this pap smear is going to help them lower their chances of dying of cervical cancer. What women are not told is that your chances of dying of cervical cancer are approximately 3 in 100,000 if they get pap smears regularly, and 6 in 100,000 if they don't. This is not a reasonable improvement for many people. The chances of dying of cervical cancer. Did you know that not everyone who gets cervical cancer dies of it? In fact, most people who get cervical cancer do not die of it. Interesting. So the other way to perceive the extent of this fraud is that a woman gets a pelvic exam every 1 to 5 years, depending. So over a 20-year period, her reproductive life, she can possibly get about 10 pelvic exams at the most. And some doctors do them every year, which is by any measure medically unnecessary, but that's, again, we call that rape, inappropriate sexual touching without consent. Why is it without consent? Because the lady is deceived into believing that she has a medical benefit to receive when there is none. And for any one woman to get 100,000 pelvics is just not logistically possible in a lifetime. And again, the probability of benefit is so absolutely minuscule. The idea that it's medically beneficial to the recipient is almost ludicrous. And again, the fact that the deception is involved makes the sexual touching rape. That's just how it's defined, the sexual touching without consent. On a public exam, I've had a few. It's pretty darn invasive. Now I look at larceny. Larceny is interesting. Larceny is the unauthorized taking and removal of the personal property of another by an individual who intends to permanently deprive the owner of it. Now, this is very clear. But let's take a look at this. A doctor goes in to do a surgery, for one thing, finds nothing. Now he's in there. He's opened up the abdomen. How's he going to get paid? Answer, take out a healthy organ. Another healthy organ. It had nothing to do with the surgery. And taking out that healthy organ is the unauthorized taking and removal of the personal property of another by an individual who intends to permanently deprive the owner of it. So this is larceny. This happened to me. At the time, I felt like I'd been violated. I couldn't put my finger on it at the time. But I had gone to the hospital thinking I had a bowel obstruction. The doctor came to the emergency room, declared an emergency. I had to have surgery, cut me open, found absolutely nothing wrong, and decided he would take out my appendix just for good measure. So taking out his healthy organ was his excuse for getting paid. What he didn't realize was I didn't have insurance. So I was going to pay him anyway. He didn't need to create larceny in the form of taking out a healthy organ in an unauthorized manner. He didn't sign a consent for it. And so removing my personal property. What's more personal than an internal organ? But this is something that's done absolutely all the time. How about just operating on the wrong patient, opening up the wrong patient, taking out a healthy organ, because we got the person open, and oh well. But we need to look at these things as larceny. Unauthorized taking and removal of the personal property of another by an individual who intends to permanently deprive the owner of it. Now, larceny, by the way, there's larceny, and then there's grand larceny. Grand larceny in the United States, on the federal level, is $100 and simple under $400. So grand larceny is frequently committed by physicians. One example of grand larceny would be a biopsy based on a cancer screening exam. For example, a biopsy based on a prostate test. So really, you could count any biopsy of the prostate as grand larceny. Why is this? Well, first of all, the cost of the biopsy is more than $400, so you got a price in the grand larceny range. So why is it theft, and what's being stolen? The thing that's being stolen is the money, the price of the biopsy, the cost of the surgeon doing the biopsy, the cost of the laboratory to look at the biopsy. So why is this grand larceny in the case of prostate cancer? Well, if we go to our usual .gov website, and we've got to rely on .gov, we don't want any unauthorized sources, unauthorized information contaminating, our view of the world here. We find that the life expectancy of somebody with prostate cancer is 80 years of age. 80 years of age. And that's the cancer.gov website. So for the census.gov website, where it talks about life expectancy of United States citizens, the average male in the United States lives until 76 years of age. This is 2010 data, so we're comparing the year 2010 to the year 2010. So in 2010, life expectancy for prostate cancer was 80. In 2010, life expectancy for an average healthy male, 76. So if you take a person with prostate cancer and you treat their prostate, let's just say you cure it, you now return them to the regular pool of men without prostate cancer. So now you've shortened their life expectancy from 80 years of age down to 76 years. You've just taken 4 years off that person's life. This is grand larceny theft. So, and we also, another word for this would be larceny and deceit or trickery. So this is a theft of an amount of money greater than $400 by deceiving the person into believing they actually have an increased survival or increased life expectancy if they have this cancer treated. And so big discussion going on in the medical community now about whether or not prostate cancer should even be considered a cancer because the survival is so high and the death rate is so low, even when it's not treated. So what about felonious assault? Felonious assault is interesting. Felonious assault is causing physical harm to a person or to their unborn child. Now, what I don't understand is what happens when the child is born. I mean, if one can determine that the harm occurred when the child was not yet born, what happens once the child is born? Is the crime deemed null and void? I don't know. But let's just say, for the sake of discussion, that causing physical harm to a person or their unborn child might mean physically assaulting a woman such that maybe she goes into preterm labor, even if the preterm labor resolves, that there was harm to the unborn child. This is called felonious assault. And certainly prenatal care definitely falls in this category. And this is really a shock. The death rate for women has increased fivefold in the past 25 years since the institution of prenatal care. And so this is certainly a case, medically speaking, of felonious assault, causing physical harm to a person or to their unborn child. So the question is, as a potential patient, where do you draw the line with this? And I think that each of us has to draw our own personal line. I don't think you can impose on another person how much punishment they'll take, whether they want to stop at simple assault, where they're not going to tolerate a physical exam, for example, like I'm not going to do any screening exams, or whether they're going to say, okay, simple assault is okay, but I'm not going to accept aggravated assault with weapons and instruments. And maybe they'll say, well, you know, petty larceny, it's over under $400. You know, I'm not going to get bent out of shape over that small amount of money. Or maybe a person would want to draw the line at grand larceny, something over $400. In this case, a lifetime of therapy with cholesterol drugs. We know that cholesterol drugs have a 30% annual harm rate, and have a benefit rate of less than 1 in 1,250. So we can definitely put that up as grand larceny. Or do you want to draw the line at felonious assault, causing physical exam to harm or harm to a person or to an unborn child? Maybe it's time for women to go to court and to accuse their provider of felonious assault as a way of avoiding the harm of prenatal care. So we think it's time to consider these things or to take a look at testing this. Next is dismemberment. We're just getting a little bit worse. You know, just going to go up to, right on up to death here. People are asking if I'm in the chat room. Yes, I am in the chat room. I think I have a moderator. Okay, so what have we got? After felonious assault, I think, is dismemberment. Dismemberment is interesting. And it's the act of cutting, tearing, pulling, wrenching, or otherwise removing the limbs of a living thing. So that means you've got to remove an arm, a leg, or something like that. It may be practiced upon human beings as a form of capital punishment, as a result of traumatic accident, or in connection with murder, suicide, or cannibalism. This is interesting what they say next. As opposed to surgical amputation. So they want to exempt surgical amputation. So if they give you anesthesia, the surgeon doesn't get paid for it, they're saying that they don't want you to think of that as dismemberment, even though you wake up without a limb. And so they're saying a distinction is made between different types of dismemberment, such as intentional. Criminal dismemberment is known as mayhem. Now, mayhem is a term that has been applied to medical interventions such as doing a vasectomy on a male, for example. But let's just keep it simple. Dismemberment, simply amputating a limb that doesn't need to be amputated. For example, I had a patient in my medical practice. He was 68 years old, and he was diabetic, and he had two of his toes were obviously infected and blue. And the doctors told him that he absolutely needed to have these two toes amputated. And he didn't like that decision there, so he decided, well, I'm not going to go in the hospital, I'm not going to have my toes amputated. And they were very upset. They contacted his family. His family said, oh, my God, he surely lost his mind. This man is senile. We have to intervene and save him. Well, he made his family promise him that if he could get another opinion and that doctor said he didn't need to get his toes taken off, that they would leave him alone and let him fly to Florida to a natural healing center. So he came to my office. I had no idea if this agreement he had made with his family. He didn't tell me. And he just told me that, you know, he's 76 years old, and he didn't want to get his toes taken off, and surgeons wanted it taken off. So I took a look at it. I said, well, you know what? And this guy is 76. He owned his own printing company. And actually, this printing company supported the whole family. I mean, the whole family, the extended family. And so I said, well, you know, Mr. Jones, the way I look at it, as you got this old making bad decisions, it's okay, let's make one more bad decision. It might turn out as well as all your other bad decisions. In other words, it might turn out just okay. And so he said, okay, doctor, would you write me a note saying that? And I said, sure. And I wrote a note saying I'd examine him, and, you know, I figured that it was reasonable for him to decide that he didn't want to have surgery. Oh, my God. As soon as I got home, people called me at home. They even, I don't know if they found my home number or what, called me up. I said, Dr. Dennis, do you know what you're doing? Do you have any idea what you're doing? Do you know that this man, you know, runs this business? He's making a lot of money. He's supporting all of us, and we do not want him dropping dead, and we don't appreciate this. So I said, well, you know, I think this guy's done okay so far with his life, and I think we're going to let him make a few more decisions. I think it'd be okay. Oh, well, they said some not very nice things to me, and then that was the end of the conversation. So he did fly to Florida. He underwent this fasting and cleansing and all this other stuff, and his toes cleared up, and he didn't need the amputation. He lived out the rest of his life with all 10 toes. So obviously, for him to have undergone surgery for that, in retrospect, would have certainly been dismemberment, and I'm sure many Americans who are offered the option of amputation feel that they have no choice when actually maybe they do. And so this is dismemberment, the act of cutting, tearing, pulling, wrenching, or otherwise removing the limbs of a living thing. And a finger is a limb, so is a toe. So the question is, are you willing to go for it? Are you willing to go for dismemberment? Now, a lot of people are saying, no, Dr. Daniels, but at the time the doctor presents these options, it all seems so urgent. It all seems so real. It all seems so necessary. And you step back and you realize, though, that 85% of everything doctors do is absolutely not necessary, in fact, not even helpful. And that can give you the strength to say, let me think about it. Let me get back to you. Let me pray on this. I have to consult my spouse. That's a very important one. I have to consult my spouse. I would not want to do something like this without first informing my spouse. Now we have Obamacare, or the Affordable Health Care Act, that means that your health care is all paid for in advance, which means that your protestations are not taken as seriously because, of course, violating your desires or wishes will not result in non-payment or lack of reimbursement. So, it's really important to step back and realize what you're dealing with here is a doctor who's relying on a source of information or data that is totally erroneous, and he's making his data based on that erroneous miseducation from the insurance companies, from the drug companies, and from the hospitals. And that's where he's coming from. So the doctor is coming from a place of certainly miseducation. So now we have just plain torture. Torture is big. Torture is a precursor to death. And so what is torture? Torture is inflicting incredible physical human suffering. Usually it's to exact a confession, but it doesn't have to be. Sometimes it can just be a punishment. So it's the infliction of severe physical pain as a means of punishment or coercion, an instrument or a method for inflicting such pain. So there are lots of examples of torture. I think an easy, simple example of torture is your typical biopsy. So a person has received this severe physical pain as a means of coercion to force them to take the next step, which is, of course, to have the full-blown surgery. Oh, my gosh, we have a biopsy. We found something. We think we found something. Well, you want to be sure, don't you? Oh, yes. Get both breasts off. Absolutely. Don't delay. You wouldn't want to take a chance, would you? So this is important to understand these steps of what's going on here. And then if you've ever been in the intensive care unit, I've never been there physically as a human being, I've certainly been there as a physician taking care of patients, you know, those people are being tortured. You know, make absolutely no mistake about it, they are being tortured. Now, the question is there a penalty for torture? Well, it certainly should be. And we see here that the American Civil Liberties Union wants to have some type of accountability for torture. But it's very important. And I would say if you or a loved one is being tortured in a medical facility, you know, report to the ACLU, see what they do. Find an international body to report the torture to. You know, this needs to be done. People need to at least view this in layman's terms, not dressed up with a bunch of fancy labels and fancy terms to obscure the bare practical meaning of really what's going on, which is just plain torture. And that's all there is to it. And many people who are in the intensive care unit don't make it out of there. Why? Because of the therapies they receive while they're there. And that's very, very unfortunate. It's definitely an eye-opener. And so it's really important to realize that you are being tortured. And you don't need to ask if you're being tortured, because all you have to ask is, are you experiencing severe physical pain? And is someone else's physical activity causing it? Well, if that's the case, then we've just filled the definition of torture, an infliction of severe physical pain. Now, it says as a means of punishment or coercion. And many people don't realize the level of coercion until they leave the hospital, get the bill, and find out that the hospital is taking actions to lean their house or whatever. And so then the torture in the hospital was a means of coercion for the excuse to put a lien on the person's house. This got so bad in Syracuse that the state legislature got involved and said that the hospital could lien people's houses but could not evict them and sell their houses. This is very interesting that, you know, you have this hospital that supposedly cares about its patients, and if they have an unpaid bill, then the hospital wants to evict the person from their home, sell it, and take the money, leaving the person homeless for care they receive, which, of course, did not improve them. I won't say of course, I'll say usually, because, again, less than 85% of all care received actually improves the person's situation. Much of the care leaves the person no better off, much leaves them worse off, and a substantial fraction actually die as a result of it. So that's torture. But what about just plain death? Now, here's the big one. But I'm telling you, death is not something that just happens. Or I guess what I can say is death is usually not something that just happens. It's preceded in degrees. It's preceded step by step, inch by inch. It's preceded by simple assault and then aggravated assault, then larceny, grand larceny, felonious assault, dismemberment, mutilation, and torture. And so there's this continuum here, and if you start on a simple assault, that's with your annual physical exam, and move along this continuum without hesitation, without protest, then you can quickly find yourself to the point of death. And so what you have to figure out here is at what point on this continuum, at what point are you going to say enough? Now, the other problem I find in the United States and the American culture is, in order for me to think, in order for one person to think that another person is harming them, they feel that they need validation from the judicial system. They feel that they need the validation of a judge or a law enforcement person saying, wait, this person is harming you. No, you don't need validation. You are an adult. You can actually make that decision all by yourself. And so what people will say is, well, you know, I thought this was assault. It felt uneasy to me. I didn't like it. I was a little suspicious, but I figured, let it pass. If you've ever been to a doctor, if you've ever had a physical exam, you've had that sensation. I can tell you I have, too. I've actually had two emergency surgeries, both of which turned out to be unnecessary. And most emergency surgeries are just that, unnecessary. We have a question, so let's take a pause and take this question. There we go. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Okay, so what I'm saying then is we can talk about death, but in the you can't talk about it in an isolated, absolute sense, because unlike the other stages, it doesn't ever occur by itself. It's always a step-by-step process. It's preceded by many other steps. And so in order to prevent the ultimate event, which is death, you have to recognize simple assault. You have to recognize aggravated assault. And you have to draw your line somewhere before death. Otherwise, you will definitely get there. I'll tell you a story of a really prominent citizen in Syracuse. He owned his own business and had excellent insurance. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor diagnosed him as having borderline hypertension, like, you know, 135-ish or so. They decided, just to be sure, they put him on blood pressure medicine, which he dutifully took. And he noticed that when he took his blood pressure medicine, he felt a little tired, kind of foggy and weak. We didn't realize was that he was the victim of simple assault. He was the victim also of aggravated assault committed with a weapon, weapon being the prescription pad and the blood pressure cuff. Not only that, but he's also the victim of grand larceny. I'm sure he spent over $400 worth of money on his cumulative doctor visits. And then he was experiencing felonious assault with his busyness. But failure to recognize this led to death. He went to his business one day. He was standing up, talking to his wife, and boom, dead in minutes. And so you cannot look at death as saying, well, I'm not going to be murdered by medicine. Well, I object to being murdered. So I'm going to draw the line right there. I'm just not going to let my doctor murder me. No can do. Because death is not something that presents isolated. It's preceded by all of these. And as in the example I just told you, the person went from simple assault, routine physical exam, to aggravated assault, committed with a weapon, the prescription pad and the cuff, to larceny, and then to grand larceny, because he continued to spend money on these health visits, and felonious assault when he experienced the side effects, which he and his master ignored. And having ignored the felonious assault, he progressed quite promptly to death. He didn't go through the steps of dismemberment, mutilation, and torture. So you have to draw the line somewhere before death. Let's see. I have a question here. Click this button again. And people have questions. We're going to take questions now. Hi, you on the air?
Hello?
Yes? Did you have a question? Okay. So, it's important then to draw the line. And you got to make a plan, and you got to draw the line. Because if you don't draw the line, it's very easy to slide from one category to the other. And to you got to realize what's going on. You have to realize that what you are experiencing is assault, is aggravated assault, is larceny, grand larceny, felonious assault, dismemberment, mutilation. Women who have breast biopsies based on a screening mammogram, this is simply an act of mutilation or maiming, a physical injury that degrades a person's appearance or function of any living body and sometimes causing death. These people can also die from complications of the biopsy itself. And so we're in a situation at a time when hospital-acquired infections are commonplace. They killed, well, 2012 killed 63,000 people that year alone. So getting a mutilating biopsy with the potential of dying, you know, this is a criminal act. And it's not necessary for you to wait until the criminal justice system recognizes it as such. You need to take action yourself to recognize this and decide that you're not going to participate in it. It's become a little more challenging with the Compulsory Insurance Act. However, as my father would say, they've taken your money, don't let them take your health too. And that's an important attitude to have. Unfortunately, a lot of people, once their money is taken, they want to get their money's worth. And nothing could be more dangerous. There is no arena where it could be more dangerous than in healthcare. Once you've got your money, count it gone and make up your mind that you're not going to follow, that you're not going to let them take you as well and take your life. And, you know, that's important. You cannot be a consumer. You can't say, well, I've paid for it, and darn it, I'm going to consume it. That does not work. That is a recipe for disaster, an absolute recipe for disaster. Now, I want to say, you have 15 minutes left, so I have announcements. Yes, announcements. I have a second radio show on RBN Network. It has the same name, Healing with Dr. Daniels. And it's on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I can tell you about it because, well, that's all I know. And I guess you would listen to it by going to RBN. So that's one announcement. Another announcement is that folks are going, and we'll start the sale. Today is Tuesday. We'll start tomorrow about 2 p.m. And we'll flip the switch, and it'll be a good sale. That's a going-out-of-date sale. That means that the Vitality Capsules will be half price and one bottle free. So that means basically three for the price of one. Of course, you will have to pay shipping, But that should be a great relief for people who have these shipping costs are very high. I have to figure out how to get them down lower. But it'll be a going out of date sale. So it'll start tomorrow at 2 p.m. And so we have 300 bottles left, and when they're gone, they're gone. The expiration date on the bottles is February. It means the end of February. But they're quite strong, and they'll be still good after that date. We should be getting our next shipment in about the same time, end of February. But so there may be a few where they will not be available. And so if anyone else has any questions, they can click their question thing. I think it's a 1. We can answer questions. And I have to find out what the next week's topic is going to be. Next week, I'm going to have to send out emails for next week's topic because I'm not bringing it up in the browser. So what we'll do then is we're going to have topics in advance, 5 weeks in advance. So I've got the topics done 5 weeks out in the future, and that's it. That's all I have to say tonight. If we don't have any more questions, let me check the chat room here. Okay, we have one person who does not want to participate in Obamacare. Good. And so asking if your child's teeth are pulled without your consent, is that a crime? And absolutely it is. All right, let's take a question from this listener.
Hi,
you're on the air.
Hello? Oh, okay,
yeah,
sorry.
So
I was trying to get my computer off. I have a question about physical therapy. I keep hearing horror stories about people going to physical therapy and getting worse. I had a friend who, she had some arms that she'd had an injury or something and couldn't lift her arms over her head. So she went, her doctor sent her to physical therapy. And then her insurance company, she had to choose arms. It was like they couldn't pay for both arms for physical therapy. They could only pay for one. And anyway, so she chose the arm that she felt was worse and she wanted physical therapy on. And the arm that they worked on got worse and the one that they didn't work on got better. And I just seem to run into this quite a bit. You know, it was so bizarre to me. But, do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I'll give you my opinion on that for sure. I practiced medicine from 1990 to the year 2000. And when I first started practice, my own private practice. I've been practicing for many years before. My own private practice, I was so thrilled. One thing I could count on was physical therapy. I send patients to physical therapy. Oh, my God, they got better every time. There was one physical therapist. He was really good. I was just so thrilled. He was practicing in Syracuse, and I could send him all of my patients. He could help them get better. That was 1990. Around 1993, something happened. All of a sudden, all the physical therapy became ineffective, totally ineffective. I would even send him patients, and they wouldn't get better. Or, heaven forbid, they would get worse. I said, oh, my God, this is awful. And it's what you hinted at. The insurance companies and the state certification agencies are regimenting the physical therapists, so literally they are limited in how much improvement a patient is allowed to experience. And this is why I tell people, if you want to get better, then you really need to keep that insurance card in your pocket and say, hey, you know what? I'm paying cash. I don't get better. I don't pay. Or I'm paying cash. I die. Nobody gets paid. You really need to ante up to the bar, say man up or put on your big boy pants or whatever the expression is that you like. You have to do that because between the certifying agencies, for example, as a doctor, my certifying agency would be the state medical board. And the insurance companies who determine payment, the criteria they use, if a practitioner complies with his licensing requirements and the insurance company requirements, then the patient will be pretty, will not be well off at all. And so the only way you can release either your doctor or your physical therapist to do something useful for you is to not use insurance. And when I was in medical practice, I would tell people that. And they would come to my office. I would do, you know, what I thought they needed done. It actually worked. They got relief. And then they would submit it to their insurance company to try and get reimbursed. And they always asked for a copy of the charts. I didn't lie. I told them exactly what I did. And they told the patient, I'm sorry, the doctor did not give you a pill. And if the doctor did not give you a pill and you got better, then it must be you were malingering and you were never sick in the first place and we're not going to pay the claim. How's that for reasoning? So it's not what it used to be. So what I ended up doing as of 93-ish is I would actually write people instructions for what to do at home. For example, your friend with these two bad arms would have, you know, maybe put them both against the wall and walked up the wall with her arms and gently walked down the wall. There's all kinds of things that you can do at home with or without the help of another person. So, again, another case of at least grand larceny. This person was led to believe that she was receiving beneficial therapy when everyone knew, the physical therapist certainly, and definitely the insurance company because they made the rules, that she was not going to get better. And she was simply robbed. And people need to realize, hey, I've been robbed. And once you can at least admit to yourself that you've been robbed, you can at least make up your mind, okay, I got robbed. I'm not going to get robbed again. What can I do to not be robbed again? And then once you can admit to yourself that you were robbed, then you can talk to your friend and say, you know what, I was robbed. Oh, my God, I was robbed. And so if we just have even 10% of people who receive medical care realizing what's going on, having the honesty with themselves to acknowledge that this happened, and then talking with their friends, you'll have a whole new set of conversation. Instead of people sitting down calmly discussing, oh, I have this drug, I'll have that drug, I'll have this side effect, I'll have that side effect, someone will say, oh, my God, this is torture. We're being tortured. Oh, dear, this is grand larceny. With the money I spent on these pills, oh, my God, I've been robbed. And then you have everyone at the, I don't know how you call it, the old age home, but in Syracuse we have a place where the old folks all gather to play cards or whatever. And people can have a whole different conversation. This is important to have this different conversation to change the mindset so people can then put together a meaningful plan of how you know, they're going to avoid this, because that's important. Right now, people are afraid to mention anything because they don't want to feel, well, you know, ridiculous or stupid. People are actually dying of embarrassment. Have another question? Hi, you're in the air.
Hi. Hi, yeah, I was wondering about teeth. When a bridge comes out and then another tooth that was, I don't even remember what they did, but they both came out, so I've got trouble chewing now, and I'm wondering, was there something wrong with the way they did it, or was the theory wrong altogether of trying to put a bridge in your mouth? Now I'm going to wind up with needing false teeth. And I'm just wondering, maybe the hospital where I went or the school did something that didn't need to be done because they were teaching students. And I'm just wondering how I would ever find that out. You know, root canals
this
that weren't needed.
That's a difficult one to find out. So my question is, did you have the kind of bridge that was held on with the wire hooks?
No. No, it was cemented on, and it rusted out, completely rusted out.
Oh.
And I'm wondering if there's a ceramic way that I've heard some kind of ceramic dentist, maybe there'd be a ceramic type of teeth you could glue it together ceramically.
Okay, got it. Okay, let me answer that question. Dentistry is not a lot better than medicine. In fact, there are those who believe that it is going to the dentist that creates the need for medical care, in other words, long-term medical problems. Now, there's a couple of things a person brought up. One was a ceramic bridge or the bridge was cemented in, basically, crumbled and rusted. It just seems to me that a person would use a material that wouldn't rust in the mouth because you know that it's going to be exposed to water. But the other issue, which I didn't hear mentioned, was the strength of the teeth. The possibility that the treat teeth were unusually brittle. And that is, that's an epidemic. And we now know that fluoride contributes to that. What I think people don't know, though, in terms of their diet, is eating boneless, skinless meat contributes to that. Because it's the gelatin in the skin, in the connective tissue that you would inadvertently suck or eat off the bones, that is where the teeth strength comes from. So if you're eating boneless, skinless meat, or things like, I think they're called like chicken tenders, they glue together a bunch of chicken fragments and then put a fried coating around them. So those things, failure to eat the offal, which is the skin, organs, tendons, cartilage, failure to eat that part of the meat is what causes brittle teeth and brittle bones. And so we have someone in the chat room who says, so jellied pig feet are good. Actually, jellied pig feet are good. Another person says jellied pig feet, but when you prepare pig feet or you buy pig feet, they have a gel surrounding them, and that gel is actually what gelatin is. And what that does is that is what fortifies your bones. Now, in the old days, they used to think that African Americans had strong bones because they were genetically superior to people who were not African Americans, which is, of course, outrageous, silly. But what really happened was blacks just culturally end up eating the unwanted parts of the pig. In other words, the pig's feet, which is mostly skin and tendons. And what happened was they developed very, very strong bones and very strong teeth because of it. And so it really is a dietary thing. When this person has already lost quite a few teeth and they end up needing dentures. But for the remaining teeth, it might be that a dietary change would make some progress with this. Well, a person in chat room mentioned jellied pig's feet. You can also make your own broth, make your own gelatin by boiling chicken bones, beef bones. I've tried pork bones. I'm not so sure that they're so good, but somehow the pig feet seem to work out much better and taste much better. And if you haven't grown up with it, it's a pretty big stretch. You might want to buy prepared gelatin and use that instead. I see. Well, you had mentioned here in the chat room that the physical therapist that works on you is important. It used to be, but now more and more, you know, physical therapists are under a lot of pressure, just like doctors are under a lot of pressure to help people not get better. Because if a physical therapist doesn't work, if it's not effective, what do you do? Well, you go on for orthopedic surgery. Why don't you? And so you then create a whole other stream of income. And what you do then is you allow the person to frustrate themselves with physical therapy so that they'll just beg for the invasive but unnecessary surgery. So that's it for this episode. We'll see you back next week. You'll be getting your emails. And tomorrow at 2 p.m. is our big going out of date sale. And you'll be getting an email if you're on the email list. If you're not on the email list, go to vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files and enter your name in that upper right box. You'll get your free report about how to treat common infections without antibiotics, and you'll be on our mailing list, and you'll get notification of when the sale goes live. Okay. Thank you very much.